The Annihilation of the Sense op di Versidi 117. 118 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Idea. Realization is the measure of accomplishment. Realization is the product of right thinking, right feeling, and right acting. Realization is not attainable except as the reaction of right doing, only experience, renunciation, compassion, love, service, and ideality can build realization, and only realization is capable of elevating man through the various spheres of consciousness. Thus are definitely set forth the way, the means, and the end, but no man can take this path for another. Diversity is the paramount illusion. Only realization can overcome the concept of diversity. A great soul is obvious from his instinctive effort to synthesize the elements of life. Take, for example, the so-called body of knowledge. That which man believes he knows, he has divided into a host of subdivisions, each of which is served by intellects naturally segregative and separative. The physicist, the biologist, and the anthropologist all live in worlds apart, each seeking with his own particular fragment of the body of knowledge to solve the riddle of it all. However, as consciousness reveals more and more of reality to man, all these man-made divisions disappear and the multitude of streamlets converge to form the three great rivers of science, philosophy, and religion. These, in turn, eventually empty into the one great ocean of truth. Never will knowledge be possible, however, until we realize that each part is helpless without all the others, that all branches of learning are useless, until merged in a single science representing the sun of human thought, feeling, and belief. It is sad but true that with few exceptions what man thinks he knows actually stands between him and knowledge, for he who is rich in beliefs is usually a pauper in facts. The theorist is too involved in his own irrational complexities to recognize rational simplicity. Barring the individual from the path of attainment are not only the unrecognized absurdities of his own life, but also the cumulative prejudice, bigotry, and false emphasis of generations. The theology of his fathers, the philosophy of his ancestors, and the stupendous scientific institutions of his contemporaries all tend to overawe the individual into acceptance of the unreal. The gods are so silent and man so bombastic that ignorant mortals may well be excused if they regard the dogmatic utterances of man as more authoritative than the silence of the gods. Only after much experience with the pyrotechnics of discordant isms is the eloquence of divine silence discernible. The world is largely composed of people whose smugness is impervious, people who are orthodox in their orthodoxy and orthodox in their heterodoxy. With equal facility they defend both their plethora of beliefs and their paucity of them. Exhibiting the keenest pleasure, they conduct one through the many chambers of their minds, woefully unaware that all this vast mental establishment represents a prison and not a palace. He who would tread the path that leads to light and liberation must first cast aside not physical possessions, which, at best, are but jugas, but the so-called treasures of the mind, which are actually a hodgepodge of notions, divorced from all bias and assumption, stripped of the garments of pomp and ceremony, and exchanging the robes of self-satisfaction for the simple saffron garment of humility. The mendicant soul achieves by the middle road. His reliance is neither upon God nor man but upon the law. In full realization that the law of all things is ultimate perfection, the seeker after reality takes his stand upon that eternal urge which moves all to this ennobled end. The Annihilation of the Sense of Diversity 119. The Pythagorean Theory of Triads. The fundamental motion of the one toward the two and from their sum. The triad is established. The triangle is the skeleton of the universe, the whole diversity of life being erected upon a threefold foundation. The complicated order of manifestation may cause the uninformed to lose sight of the unchanging three, which is indeed the God of the wise. Chapter 6. The Disciplines of Salvation. Assuming realization to be the product of definite philosophic disciplines, we now turn to a consideration of the sciences and procedures which are most valuable in the unfoldment of the rational intellect and the directionalization of the conscious knower, initiated into the mysteries of contemplative philosophy by the Brahman initiates of Ellora and Ele Fanta. Pythagoras set forth three disciplines as essential to salvation through unity with universal cause. Supreme in his contemplative genius, Pythagoras differs from his Eastern mentors in that he conceived the universal state to be attained through elevation of the mind rather than annihilation of thought procedure. As the first step toward realization, he accordingly taught the training of the mind so as to make it capable of sustained logical activity. The misconception is quite general that a common school education equips the mind for the profession of living, and, if supplemented by university training, the individual is thereby qualified to question and debate intelligently the dictums of eternity. Modern education is not founded upon strict rational procedure, hence the mass of humanity is not educated but rather supports its notions by the vain mumblings of archaic dogma. Unless first subjected to definite disciplines, the mind is incapable of rational functioning. There are few, alas, who, like the young Dalai Lama of Tibet, are able to rise in their cribs on their natal day and recite the sutras in a convincing manner. If a man should approach us and say, "I am a human being and a biologist simply because I am a born biologist," we would consider him ridicule. Us, knowing that many years of definite application must be spent in equipping the reason to cope with the issues of biology. Yet if someone else equally lacking in fitness comes along and 121 says, "I am free, white, and 21, my thoughts, consequently, are as good and my conclusions concerning life as sound as those of any other man," we would smile benignly and exclaim, "Ah, vive la democratic!" Since few people regard thinking as an exact science, an intellect such as Socrates could in a few moments literally rip to shreds the entire fabric of human notions. To learn to think intelligently requires more time and effort than any other profession known to man, and is only to be realized through the most exacting disciplines. Most worldly wise men are in the same position as the young patrician, Alcibiades, who because he wrestled well and played the lyre not too badly considered himself qualified to sit in the Athenian Senate. But all are not fortunate enough to have Socrates, the plebeian, barking at their heels, continually reminding them in no uncertain terms that not on a single count could they qualify with the same delightful inconsistency characteristic of human procedure. When Socrates revealed to the Athenians their ignorance, they corrected the condition by poisoning the man who had the audacity to confront them with it. Pythagoras invariably demanded of his disciples a familiarity with the principles of three sciences, mathematics, music, and astronomy. These sciences are today capable of filling the same ends which they served in ancient days, for they not only reveal to those familiar with their principles certain cosmic verities, but also instill the principles of order, rationality, and comparative values. The curse of the 20th century is the superficiality of its thought and the resultant insufficiency of the foundation upon which the structure of life is erected. What does it mean to become proficient in mathematics, music, and astronomy? Remember, we do not refer to the utilitarian aspect of these sciences, which too frequently realizes its ideal in the creation of the bookkeeper, the jazz pianist, and the elderly prognosticator who determines the annual precipitation from observation of the size of the sunspots. Those who approach life with the Oriental attitude namely, that matter is a vast sea of illusion, may rightly question 122 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. The Disciplines of Salvation 123. The Advisability of Devoting Years to the Mastery of Sciences. Wholly concerned with the substances of the illusion. Such individuals, however, must learn to regard a certain rational grasp of the tangible as prerequisite to a conception of the intangible. It is not what man actually learns that is of value to him, but rather the mental and spiritual activities within his own nature that necessarily precede and follow learning. Like the carpenter building a chair, the accomplishment is not the production of the chair but the ability to build chairs. Thus thought in itself should not be regarded as an accomplishment or necessarily valuable, for only the ability to think represents a definite degree of unfoldment within the nature of the thinker himself. When the student realizes that the entire fabric of creation is permeated by certain exact elements and principles, he unconsciously begins to figure and think in terms of exactness. The philosophy of salvation is nothing if not exact. According to both Pythagoras and Plato, mathematics is the father of the sciences, the first and greatest of the mystical disciplines of exactness. Without mathematics as a foundation, nothing can endure. Upon its exactitude is raised the entire structure of order and sequence. All other arts and sciences are dependent size of mathematics, for into each enters the element of pre-caesarean that manifests the unchangeable nature of number. Referring to our fundamental symbolic triad, mathematics is the dot, music the line, and astronomy the circle. The mice teres of the invisible causal sphere are to be approached by the principles of mathematics. The mysteries of the intermediate sphere are revealed by the profundities of aesthetics and harmonics. The mysteries of the inferior sphere are disclosed by the study of astronomy. Thus these sciences are the first triad of knowing, and he who masters them is equipped to face the universe with a definite assurance that he is part of a scheme whose principles are inflexible, whose agencies are bountiful, and whose results are exact. Many people with whom we have discussed these Pythagoric disciplines complain that life is so short and its problems so numerous that time does not permit the mastery of such complex